stocks, bonds, ETFs, straight out of downtown Chicago. This is Zach's Market Edge.
Welcome to Zach's Market Edge, the podcast about investing in your life. I'm your host, Tracy Reinick, and this week I'm joined by David Bartosiak, the editor of the Home Run Investor and the Momentum Trader, and we're going to discuss two areas that are near and dear to his heart, cars and sneakers.
Oh, man.
I know. Both in the same episode. That's almost scary.
I'm going to explode.
I know. Specifically, we're going to talk about the collectible side and what that market is like, because it's been super hot. Red, red hot, sizzle, sizzle. But is it a bubble? Have collectibles gone into, you know, another world and it's going to be crash and burn, or what's actually going on there? You know, you, Dave and I, we've talked about this, about whether or not like the collectibles market reflects, you know, the overall economy and all that. So we'll maybe touch on that. And then, you know, how can you play this as a stock investor? Because there are ways you can do that. So we're going to discuss that too. So welcome.
Sweet.
Yeah, this is like right up your alley.
Totally.
Okay, so it wasn't up mine as much, although I am familiar with the baseball card side because I used to do that with my brothers in the 90s during the last bubble.
Right.
And that was fun, or trading cards as they're now called, because the world is much bigger than just baseball cards. But I do feel like I have an affinity for anything collectible because of that experience.
Sure.
So when I went around to look around at what was going on with the collectible cars, and also with the sneakers, but you and I have discussed the sneakers in the past, but I felt like, oh, yay, this is fun again. Like these, it's just a fun area to be in. Collectibles are fun.
You know, baseball cards are actually what initially piqued my interest in the stock market.
I feel like they're all kind of related, like
yeah.
All these collectible type of
things. It was
like,
hey, I could buy this and, you know, in a couple of years, it'll be worth more. Right. And then you sell it. And I was like, oh, this is great. Can I do this quicker? You know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Because the market was already a set up market. But this is what's interesting. Well, we'll get to the sneakers a little bit at the second half of the show too. But that I feel they are kind of turning into the stock market of sneakers now. Like they've adapted it so well that everything is online there and easy and quick to trade and all that stuff that used to not be there.
Sure.
I think probably the same thing is happening with baseball cards too, but I haven't gone on there to check it out.
Well, I think it's happened a while ago.
Yeah.
At least you had the price. I remember the Beckett
right.
price guides
oh,
I
yeah.
used to get.
Uh-huh.
Used to love thumbing through
Who
those.
Who doesn't like the Beckett's?
Oh, it was yeah. so, tons of fun.
But they've invented that for the sneakers now. But let's start with the cars. So I was reading a couple articles because they just had out in California what is like one of the largest car auctions of the classic cars. Mm-hmm. And it happens in Monterey and in Pebble Beach. It's called Monterey Car Week. And they were talking about how sales were actually down there this year for the first time in a while, down 14%. But at the super high end, which happened at the Pebble Beach Concours d'Elegance,
right.
That's where they've been selling the really expensive high-end cars since 1950. Those sales were very strong. I saw a couple interesting stats. I guess the most expensive car to sell at those auctions was a 1955 Jaguar D-Type Roadster, and it sold for $21.8 million. And that's the most expensive car, British car, ever sold at auction. So I guess it got like a 1 minute standing ovation because people were really thrilled. It was a neat car, I guess. And then seven cars sold for more than $10 million. But where they saw the slowing was in the more recent kind of classic cars from, you know, some parts of the 80s and into the 90s that has come down off of its super red hot. But I was looking to see, like, how red hot has it been? I know it's been, you know, crazy. And I saw this stat. They said from 2011 to 2015, some of the cars have increased as much as 300% a year. Is that right? Could that be right? It seems crazy.
That does seem kind of bonkers, but what happens is they almost get reclassified. It's like the collector market wasn't looking at that car as such a rare breed, and then all of a sudden they go like, oh no, wait, that should be in the same class as, you know, the real upper echelon
yeah.
stuff. So that's probably that. While that does happen, that's probably more rare. I think overall you just have kind of the rising tide across the board that's risen all these.
Right. I saw out of the 10 most expensive cars ever to sell at auction, 9 are Ferraris.
Oh, of course.
And then 22 of the top 30 are Ferraris. Now, why yeah. do you say, of course? Why is it? why does it have to be a Ferrari? You're smiling.
Yeah. And my whole, I don't know if you can tell, but I have goosebumps right now and butterflies. Why Ferrari? Just the storied history, the racing heritage, just all wonderful things that make up Ferrari. The red exterior, the tan interior, just the classic, the prancing horse,
okay.
Scuderia Ferrari. I mean, everything, just everything Ferrari it is what makes those. And they're just beautiful.
Yeah.
They're just gorgeous. And the rarity of some of these cars is, and when you think of the car, it's still Ferrari, right? Of course, there's yeah. Lamborghini, there's Bugatti, there's McLaren, you know, Koenigsegg. I mean, the list goes on and on. We could go on for days. I could sit here and name cars and giggle. But that's still the iconic brand, the number one most iconic brand when you're talking about racing, sports cars, and exotics is Ferrari.
Now, you can invest in Ferrari yourself these days.
That's right.
They finally went public.
RACE.
I know. It's easy to remember.
Although their racing team has been terrible this year.
Really? Oh.
Yeah. In okay. F1, they're getting smoked by Mercedes-Benz.
Okay. But their fundamentals are pretty good as a company, because I looked them up and their sales are expected to, well, their earnings are expected to rise 30% this year. Well,
I've seen the stock go from 40 to 48. Yeah. And part of the reason for those earnings is they're just, They release these cars that everybody wants, and then they'll release an even better version of that car and make it more expensive and restrict the supply, which is fantastic for the other cars, right? Because if now, you know, if the LaFerrari is a $2 million car and then you release a new edition that's $2.5 million, right? Then the guy who had the Ferrari from, you know, the F40 from the early 90s, all of a sudden that car is worth more money because that was the hypercar of the time. So it's almost like a manufacturer induced inflation that they put on these things.
Another way you can also invest in this kind of market is through Sotheby's. Their ticker is BID, bid, and they hold a lot of these car auctions, and they have for, you know, probably at least 100 years. They are expected to grow earnings about 8% this year and just, you know, a little over 2% next year. But you also get a lot of other auctions in there, you know, obviously artwork and mm-hmm. other collectibles and things. So that's a way to kind of play the entire collectibles market. Now, what about millennials and these kinds of cars? I saw mentioned that they, you know, since you grew up in the 80s and 90s, you tend to like cars that are kind of from those or that era.
Sure, it's the poster that you had on your wall,
right?
And it's a reason why when the baby boomers got money, all of a sudden the old muscle cars started coming into favor, because you could buy a muscle car for, you know, a few hundred bucks during the, you know, the gas crisis in the 70s, right? The oil crisis. Nobody wanted them because they were gas guzzlers and it was terrible on insurance and they were just horrible. So, what happens is a lot of these cars got destroyed, essentially, almost like our cash for clunkers that we had. But that's a theory that I'm going to have. I bet you these performance SUVs of the mid 90s are going to be bonkers in 20 years. But anyway,
wow.
that's a different.
That's a good
that's
you know,
a different
prediction.
Thing. Yeah. But anyway, so I think that's what's going to happen with millennials. And we've seen that on the high end, like the real rich people out there are out there buying their Lamborghini Diablos right now, right? Because that was the car that everybody had a poster of on their wall. That we were just talking about the kit car, you know, from Knight Rider. Even though it was, you know, what was it, a Trans Am?
Camaro, wasn't it?
I thought it was a Trans Am.
Was it a Trans Am? It might have been.
I mean, it's just pretty much the same body, different. Oh, that's almost embarrassing. That I
what? You know, how can you not know?
It just slipped. I don't know. Maybe you're throwing me off.
Someone look this up.
I swear, I thought it was a Trans Am.
It could have been.
Anyway, so, you know, so that became like the cool thing. The Smokey and the Bandit car.
I was just thinking that one.
That was a 79, you know, Trans Am with the Thunderbird on the hood. Well, those cars were nothing several years ago. And then all of a sudden, the people who were watching those shows growing up, I could get that car and it was inexpensive and the price of those went bonkers. So that's part of what happens. The generation finally gets money and then they start with those iconic cars and then it kind of fills in after that.
Now, I noticed that a couple interesting websites have started to pop up where you can go on there. And for even regular autos, you can search for your current SUV or these classic cars on there, and it gives you prices or people selling in your area. And one of those that I was looking at was TrueCar, and their ticker is TRU. I guess they have about 7 million monthly visitors. They're not making any money yet, though. They're supposed to lose 55 cents a share this year. And then Amazon just launched Amazon Vehicles, which they call, and I'm quoting here, a car research destination in automotive community. And you can also search various different autos on there and get prices and see specs and videos and people's reviews. What do you think, like, that is the future of some of this, for even for the classic cars, for the collectibles? You know, or does anyone who's buying like a Lamborghini for $150,000, do I really go on TrueCar to like find out anything about it? Or
100% you do.
I do. Okay.
The millennials, we want to sit there and we want to do all the research ourselves and gather all the information and put it together because we don't trust anybody. Okay.
Okay.
That's the reason why millennials don't have financial advisors, because they don't trust them. It's not because they're broke and living in their parents' basement, which is what everybody loves to say, right? Just keep on thinking that and you'll see what happens.
They're living in their cars.
There's a chip on my shoulder. Yeah. we like to take our own information and process it ourselves. So I think those kind of do-it-yourself kind of sites like the TrueCar and the Amazon, you know, Amazon thinks they can enter everything and be the number one player, which is, you know, admirable, but I don't think that just because Amazon comes in and wants to have a car site that everybody's suddenly going to be going to Amazon for all their car needs. But I also saw JP Morgan was partnering up and working on an app to simplify the car buying process from sort of A to Z, specifically aimed at millennials too. Because another thing that millennials don't like is, I don't want to talk too much about millennials here, but it is messing around with all the, you know, this reason. Well, nobody really likes going to the car dealer except for me. Right. I go there just all the time because I'm
just hang out. And they're Dave is here
again. Dealership last
Someone
week.
Go talk to him.
I plan on going to the McLaren dealership sometime this weekend, maybe if I'm lucky.
Wow.
I just go there, just smell the Carnauba wax.
It is nice. There's nothing like a new car.
Oh, man. But anyway, so nobody likes nobody likes dealing that whole process. That's why you had CarMax become so successful.
Or Saturn.
Just no haggle. And yeah, Saturn back in the day. Just like, this is the price. You know, we're not going to play any games with you. You know, get your financing. And boom, you're done.
Right. Now, what do you think about what's going on in this collectible market with these, you know, massive price increases? This year at that California auction, they actually sold only a little bit over half of the cars. That is down. I guess last year they sold 58% of the cars, and then in 2014 they sold 63%. So a lot of the sellers weren't getting the prices they wanted to get, so they didn't, you know, close the deal.
Right.
Is that kind of a sign that maybe the prices have peaked here? It's gotten a little too hot to handle, or
I think it's more of a sign that the Chinese are having trouble getting their money offshore.
Okay. They were a lot of the buyers.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the Chinese have been big buyers at the high end since, you know, 2010, really, when they really started coming in and getting aggressive and buying up everything that they could. But overall, I know you were looking at, so that's like a higher end auction over there,
it
right?
Is.
So that's the real fancy
stuff. Right. But like, what's happening with, you know, the cars that are reselling for $50,000 or $100,000?
So I was looking at cargurus.com. That's another one. And they have a price trends model where you can go in and look at the trends over time. I think the dates, you only go back to 2010, but that's still pretty decent. Some classics, right, that we were talking about earlier. 1966 Chevelle, 24% year over year.
Since 2010?
No, year over year since just last year.
Oh, just last year.
Since last year, okay. 1970 Chevelle up 59.3%. The Mustangs, the 66 is up 20%. That there's like a million 66 Mustangs, by the way. Anyway, the 68 Mustang up 52%, and then the 1970 Vet up 40%. So these are kind of the more regular,
scary,
everyday sort of cars. Right?
Okay. Yeah, that sounds kind of bubblicious to me.
Well, but you can't just take this just as, you know, a solo thing here. You got to realize, what's the price of a new Mustang now?
I don't know.
A new Mustang GT fully loaded is $50,000 almost.
Okay.
That's absurd when you think about it, right?
Yeah.
$50,000 for a Mustang. Now, I have a Mustang. I still have my '02 Mustang. If anybody wants to buy it, email me immediately. But when that car was new, it was 25, 26. So the price of a Mustang GT has doubled in the last 14 years, which isn't too crazy when you think about the grand scheme of things, right?
Yeah.
But again, it's the same thing like with the Ferraris, with the high-end Ferraris that come out and they're more expensive. It brings up all the Ferraris. So when these new cars are coming out and they're more expensive, it's going to bring up the price of all the rest of these cars, just kind of on the bottom end. And you have the technology going into the new cars that's just absolutely bonkers.
Right.
Light years ahead of, you know, even just the previous generation of these cars. But anyway, so that's why you're seeing sort of the classics, not just keeping their value, but appreciating very nicely over the course of the last year, is because even the new ones are so expensive. So if a new, you know, a new Mustang's $50,000 and you're staring at an awesome 68 Mustang that you're only going to drive it on the weekends anyway, you know, and that car is 30 grand, 35 grand, you're going to spend that money on that, right? If you can only, you know, you only need to drive it on the weekend.
Right. Okay, let's switch gears over to the sneakers because we're pressing for time here.
I like that, switch gears.
Yeah. Okay, so the sneaker side, we've been talking about this because you're a big sneaker fan, and there's been a couple new websites that have launched where you can buy and sell the sneakers, but I found a few more. And then I was reading that they just launched, Adidas just launched the Yeezy 350s for the infants, for like kids, and just like a week ago, and that sold out immediately. Now, I went on one of these sites and I was kind of looking around, and the site I was on is called GOAT, G-O-A-T. The actual site is airgoat.com. It's really a mobile app, but they do have a site too. And they had these infant Yeezys already on there. I guess this is the Kanye West line, right? Mm-hmm. And they were selling for over $320 already on there. So it seems like on the sneaker side, there's a lot more speculation going on. Like people are, this reminds me of the baseball cards. You would just go out and buy all new, whatever new anybody produced, because you thought you knew you could resell it for more, like almost immediately. It was based purely on speculation. It becomes a business. And I just saw another article with a 16-year-old who's buying and selling sneakers, and he has like $1 million of inventory in his parents' garage or something. Good for him. But like some of these stories just scream to me like there's a bubble going on.
And it is, and it's already happening. So if you look at Nike specifically, the Jordan brand. So what they used to do is used to have different releases that were harder to get, that you'd only get at, you know, Nike Town in downtown Chicago or wherever if you knew a guy, but they would still be, you know, $200, $220, just like the regular shoe, and everybody would line up and go crazy and kill each other and try to get the shoes,
right?
And it would happen all the time, and they would limit the supply of what's coming out. What's happened recently is Nike was like, wait a minute, if these people are going to wait in line and spend $220, they'll wait in line and spend $600. So what they did is they increased the quality significantly on some of these super, these just fantastic, just like one-off unique sort of shoes that you can't really get. Very exclusive. So they did that. But then the regular ones that are just kind of everyday colorways, they just make as much as humanly possible. And they restock and they keep coming out. So what's happened is a lot of people came in and they bought these shoes at the $200 level in the hopes that they'd be able to resell them for more expensive later, and it didn't happen. And that's why I was telling you last week, I got two pairs of shoes that recently came out, and I spent $120 on each pair.
So some people might be taking losses here.
Well, these guys took a loss.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's not good.
But the thing is,
now I did see from GQ that these Yeezy shoes are apparently the hottest, most influential shoes of the year. And I'm wondering, you know, how does that play in the market?
First Yeezys were.
Okay.
These are, I mean, no.
But not the later ones. Okay.
No. Well, when GQ starts telling me what the most influential shoe is going to be, that's when you know it's gone mainstream and it's no longer going to be the most influential shoe.
So what about Under Armour? I didn't see them really mentioned anywhere when I was looking around at, you know, the sneaker market. Do they even have a hot sneaker that's resale, like as a collectible?
Okay. They're too new. Nobody cares.
Okay. So they're not in the collectible market.
Hideous.
Okay. So just Adidas.
Like the Air, you know, the Air Del Curries.
Okay.
Right? The I'm just here for the cardio sixes.
Now, I was looking around because we were talking about this website that launched earlier this year called StockX, and that sells limited edition products, mainly sneakers for now, and they've gotten some money from Eminem. He's an investor in that company, but he's a big sneaker fan, and they were giving away these. I had to write it down what it is. It's a Eminem Carhartt Air Jordan 4. And you're wearing those right now.
I'm wearing the fours.
Okay, but those aren't the M&M the special ones, right?
No. But I am wearing the fours.
I was going to say, oh my gosh, Dave, because those, they sold some to raise money for charity last year, and they sold anywhere from $22,000 to $30,000 a pair, depending on the size.
Right.
And so clearly some of these, you know, the Nike brands are still way up there because it seems crazy someone's spending.
Well, that's like a super special edition.
Right.
You know.
They limit the quantities, so yeah,
there's like five pairs made.
Okay,
you know that's really special.
What's the most expensive
really
shoe to ever sell? Do you know? I couldn't find what it was.
So
has anything ever sold for like $100,000 a sneaker?
I think they had those game worn Jordan 1s in the band colorway.
Oh,
that were way up there.
Okay, I didn't think about the game worn type. The real
yeah, so that's in a different
ones. Yeah,
you know, a different different plane of existence.
Yeah.
There,
that's almost like a baseball bat or something.
Again,
like
and
that.
It goes back to like the cars. If you have a car that was a race car, you know, that has some actual heritage to it, then it's going to sell for much more than just the base model of that car. So it's the same kind of way, but I guess that's kind of a special exception.
What do you make of all these sites that are popping up to resell the shoes? Because there's the StockX that we've talked about. They've gotten, you know, seed money from a couple of big people, including the co-founder of Quicken Loans. He's in there. And then this GOAT, they're in Venice, California, or Venice Beach, and they just got $5 million in funding for theirs. And then I was looking around. There's this Flight Club. There's sneakerhead.com. There's probably other ones I'm not even mentioning here.
Yeah, so one or two of them will actually make it, and the rest will go belly up.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it seems really crowded.
Yeah,
that's also another sign
and
of the
And if you
bubble.
Look at the StockX, because I was looking around, looking at it, it's based on data from various sites, I guess, of these shoes actually selling. And there's so much variation in these shoes in terms of the version, so you have which version, you have which colorway, you have which size, that there's not enough price data moving back and forth to get any real significant trend developing, really.
Okay. I saw from GOAT that they will authenticate the sneakers. Like, so you take pictures
StockX
of it,
does that
they
too.
Do it too. Yeah. And you send it to them, to their warehouse. They authenticate it and they clean it. And then they send it to the buyer because they're saying 10% now of these collectible sneakers are fakes.
Well, yeah. And then you could smell them a million miles away on eBay.
Okay.
That's like, oh, the shoe's coming from Taiwan. You know? It's like, maybe there's a problem there. So you really got to be careful and you got to go with reputable sellers. And
that kind of indicates to me that speculation is increasing too. Once you see a lot of fakes.
Well,
that happened
so
in the baseball
easy.
Cards in the 90s.
It's so easy.
Yeah. Okay. Way to play, like the sneaker side, we already talked about it. It was one of my first shows, I think, is on the podcast, The Magic of Sneakers. Mm-hmm. They're still pretty magical because I was looking at Adidas ticker ADDYY, and they're supposed to grow earnings 30% this year and another 20% next year. It seems like Adidas is really hot right now, just in general. And not cheap, though, trading at 33 times. And then Nike is a little bit cheaper, 24 times. They've kind of come off their highs. It's been a little bit rockier road for them. Still double-digit earnings growth for this year and next expected for them, a little bit less than Adidas, though. Do you still like the sneaker stocks here or like just the sports athletic stocks?
I think there's a big push into the women's right now.
Yeah.
And that's a battle between Lulu, Under Armour, and Nike. We're not sure who's going to win there, but there's going to be two people that are bruised.
Okay.
For sure, if not all three of them. And the other thing with Nike is their growth is, you know, here they're just everywhere. So you just think that Nike's everywhere, but they're not. So globally, they have a ton of room for growth in Asia and Africa that you don't have here.
Okay. That's something to keep in mind.
Yeah, but and then the Under Armour story is pretty impressive. I just saw, I was watching Premier League this weekend, and Under Armour was sponsoring one of the, you know, a few of the teams in the Premier League over in England playing soccer. It's just like, wow, they're spending a lot of money being very aggressive with their advertising. And you never know. Maybe they hold on.
Okay. Well, this has been a good discussion. So let's recap. I feel like there's no bubble in the auto collectibles right now. Would you agree with that?
On the high end.
Right.
And then at the low end.
Right. Which one? I agree. At the low end, you agree
there's
no bubble.
Well, high end and low end, I agree. It's not really bubbly. But in the middle, it might be getting a little bubbly. But it doesn't matter because you're not leveraged.
Okay. And then on the sneaker side, it seems like there's a lot of speculation going on there. And if you're actually going to buy and sell sneakers to try to make money, you should be cautious.
Well, yeah. I mean, this is what happens, right? It's like all the sheep come in and think that it's so easy, everyone can do it. When you start hearing that, that's when it's like, okay.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, I even wanted to buy some.
See? No offense.
I know.
But you don't, I mean.
I don't know anything. But
not,
I'm like,
not now. You will, though, right?
Right.
But yeah, that's what happens when everybody thinks it's so easy, we can do it. That's what we heard in real estate. That's what we heard with day trading in the stock market. We hear these things where it's so easy. And then that's when you know, watch out.
Right.
But in the Jordans, it's already happened.
Okay.
It's already begun to happen.
All right. So watch out there. Let me recap the stocks then. If you're interested in playing this through the stock market, you can get Adidas at ADDYY. Nike is NKE. Then we had Ferrari, RACE. TrueCar, TRUE. Sotheby's, you can bid on that, BID. And Amazon's always in the mix. I feel like Amazon's on almost every podcast, but they are, of course, AMZN, the all-encompassing. Soon, Amazon, if you know, they might get into that sneaker thing. Who knows? Then we'll really know it's a bubble. They suddenly launch something like that. They might be listening to this.
I mean, they're just everywhere. But it's like they roll a dice a little bit. See, you know, he's not going to fall on the sword. He's going to throw a little bit of money at it, see if it works. And then, you know, he moves on.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. You can also listen to our podcast that we did almost a year ago on the magic of sneakers and what was going on in that market. Because most of it is basically kind of the same of what's going on. We also discussed Skechers in there because they're one of the largest sneaker makers in the U.S. too. So I'll link to that one in the write-up to this podcast, and you can check that one out too. And of course, Dave's articles on Zacks.com, and you know, check us out again next week.